Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I am your host, Don Nikoloff, and we have a wonderful guest, our regular Friday night guest, coming up shortly. Just want to direct your attention to a couple of things. You definitely want to check out the BBS.com homepage, or what we call the index page. When you first arrive at the site, just put into a search engine or in your URL www.bbsradio.com and take a look at the YouTube video posted right there at the top of the page and listen to what's going on in Iraq and ask yourself, do we have clean water in the United States? Do you want to be drinking the water we have in our country? They certainly do not want to even flush a toilet in Iraq with the water that they have over there right now. You got to check out this video. Also, go to my website, directlightproductions.com. I have a fun page, and it's actually a bit inspirational even, and I added an animals page to my website. Now, a lot of people love animals. There are some humans that hate animals, and I wouldn't even categorize them in the animal league. Personally, I think we have a responsibility on planet Earth to take care of animals, to appreciate them, and to nurture them. They do the same for us. In fact, in many ways, amongst the meat eaters and those that eat poultry and fish, animals keep us alive. Anyone who has ever owned a dog or a cat knows that if you take good care of them, they will not only give you love, but they will act as your guardian. And a good dog makes a good alarm system, and a good cat makes a good mousetrap, just to name a few of the uses and the practical purposes for having a pet. However, I found it interesting through my years of research that there were more and more pictures coming out that show how animals amongst themselves and amongst different species seem to get along quite well. They have a remarkable ability to get along with each other, to agree, to coexist, all the things that people can't seem to grasp. Animals are quite adept at it, and it's a skill they're born with. They don't violate universal law. And so I'm going to be building up this animals page as time goes on to honor all the people that have taken the time to take some snapshots of their pets doing really crazy things, getting along with each other, as I mentioned, and show some things that animals can do that, quite frankly, many people can't do. I've got a video posted. This has been out for about a year or so, but I was finally able to post videos up on my site, and I've got the elephant painter that actually painted itself portrait with its trunk, and you've got to watch this. It's incredible to see this animal very carefully and adeptly paint a picture of an elephant holding a flower in its trunk. It's mind-blowing to see this, and I'll be putting up lots more animal pictures, and that's for all of you animal lovers out there. Also, we got some new updates in the photo section coming up shortly. Can't go into what that's going to be about, but I can guarantee you what I'll be posting will blow your mind, and you'll want to come back time and time again to take a look at what I'm going to be showing on my site. And you'll be telling your friends and your friends' friends, and they'll be telling their friends, and eventually even your enemies will be your friends when you tell them about the pictures that you're soon to see at directlightproductions.com. Also, some news updates. I'm going to be adding some things to the health page. It's rather important that we pay attention to our health, and there's a lot of important information coming out these days, and I just want to keep you apprised of that. Also, some of you may have heard of a product that's been out there for a couple of months now, and it's making the rounds all across the country. I am privileged to have Mr. Chris Johnson and his company, Ron Paul Flags, as a sponsor joining us hopefully sometime this coming week. And anybody that would like to own a Ron Paul flag, he's putting some specials together that you can get a bunch of them at a very reasonable price. It was an idea that that Chris said the Lord gave to him that this would help promote Ron Paul, and it has taken off. Of course, he could always sell more. There's a lot of people that still don't even know who Ron Paul is. And that's a way that we can help support his candidacy. He has not dropped out, like the mainstream media says. And God willing, there is still a chance that we can get somebody decent in the Oval Office for a change. So we're going to welcome Ron Paul Flags next week, and you'll see something on the BBS website as well as on my webpage. So you know how you can get your hands on some of these flags. All right. With that, I would like to welcome tonight's guest, and he is a very accomplished scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and a good friend, and I'm proud to know him. I'm very proud to have him regularly on Evident Footprints. I get a lot of email. Folks are interested in what he has to talk about, and we're going to talk about something that can benefit you, and I want to encourage you folks to call in tonight if you have any questions. We're going to be talking about a very pertinent topic tonight, and the station numbers that you could call in on are area code 877-876-5227. That's a toll-free number in the U.S., or the U.S. and Canada, 888-815-9756. And the direct line, 530-876-3222. With that, I welcome tonight's guest, my good friend, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. How are you doing today? You sound very good.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm just fired up. I've gotten a lot of work done today, as you can tell. You heard me talk about it a little bit. Quite a bit got accomplished, so I'm grateful for that. And I was looking forward to tonight's show because we always talk about some very unusual things, and it's good for the exercise of the brain cells, if you know what I mean.
Yes, the last thing we want is an atrophied brain.
Oh yes. We have enough of those going around.
Already too many of them.
Yes. Yes. You and I had decided that, you know, we've been talking about all this darkness, and there's the bright side, too, of course, and the technology we've been talking about. And we're going to talk a little bit tonight about technology, but I think what we're going to talk about is really going to encourage people to consider some options that we have as sovereign individuals. And, you know, we can take our sovereignty and join collectively with others. And with these changing times and all the unpredictable possibilities that could arise out of all the insanity that's going on in the world, what can we do for solutions? We can start looking at forming our own communities, setting them up upon sound scientific principles, and honoring universal law for a change. And so tonight we're going to talk about some of those things, and I know you're excited about that.
Yeah, I am. And what's really strange, Don, although perhaps it isn't so strange, as I was mentioning to you in our private conversation, I am suddenly besieged with all kinds of phone calls from all over the world, not just locally. How they find me, I'm not so sure, but they do. And they've been asking for guidance and assistance on a variety of interesting projects that range from solar collection devices all the way down to algae farms. And it's really very interesting because, there's people out there that have the money and the will and the interest in doing something different. And I'm very excited and encouraged because of the fact that they're pushing ahead regardless of all the negativity. They're pushing ahead regardless of the dunderheads that want to keep humanity down. And this is very, very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
There are things going on, and I'm glad to be a part of it, frankly.
Well, I'm not going to take the credit for what you deserve and what you earn, you know, from your status around the world. I mean, you're pretty well known on a number of internet sites, and yes, you know, being on the radio every week on a regular basis certainly helps. You're heard all over the world. And so some of that traffic might be coming from there. I have lots of people I talk to, even off the air, that bring up your research and your work, your inventions. So, who knows? You may become the next Nikola Tesla.
Oh, wow. I got a ways to go to fill those shoes, I'll tell you. But I'm at least doing what I can do, and that's pretty exciting. But these communities and these efforts that seem to be emerging are very encouraging. I thought maybe the thing to do would be for me to mention a few of the things that I've been informed about, and then we can kind of take it from there and see where you want to go with the conversation. But there's two or three very worthwhile endeavors that seem to be actively engaged already, and that's not only surprising but encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is on the northeastern shore of Brazil. People that I know are bought a huge tract of land down there, and they're going to be engaging in algae farming. And the thrust of that whole thing is a variety of potential outcomes, one of which would be a superfood, you know, because certain types of algae are extremely nourishing. There's apparently a bunch of medicines and a bunch of supplemental products that can be derived from processes of this sort. And, of course, because of their unusual location and because of the fact that they're going to be pumping tens of thousands of cubic feet of seawater, they're very interested in how best to power this installation. And I told them that I would be very happy to be a consultant in some respect. Although I can't spend all my time in Brazil, I would certainly love to go down there. Another project, which is pretty exciting and a lot closer to home, there's a religious organization I'm acquainted with in the Midwest that has purchased a large tract of land, and they've been active in a number of activities for quite a few years. Initially, it was all theological in nature, but now they have also found that on their property they've got sources of hot springs with geothermal capabilities, and I was talking to them not too long ago about some ways in which they could make use of this thermal energy that's at their disposal. And there's also several privately owned land developers that have gotten wealthy enough over the years that they are now turning their attentions towards building isolated communities for people who want to flock together for the purposes of pursuing unusual thoughts, being with other folks of similar ilk. And all these people are very interested in detaching not only from the grid, but also from the influence, the negative influence, I might add, of our governmental agencies.
Mm-hmm.
And
when you mentioned
last,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. Go ahead. I'll pick it up.
Well, when you mentioned pursuing unusual thoughts, I was hoping you weren't talking about Washington, D.C. That's all I was going to say.
No, these are folks that are interested, for instance, in philosophical issues. They're interested in astronomy. They're interested in pursuing new technologies. They're not all, you know, highly educated necessarily or engineering types, but they realize that there are other facets to reality which are not being explored. And I think this is very healthy because even if it's happening on an amateur level, it definitely demonstrates an upward thrust.
Mm-hmm.
It indicates interests outside the norm. And I think that that's a heck of a lot more enticing than watching football games and guzzling beer. But, of course, that's just me. I realize that the opposite side of the spectrum also exists. And then there was one other organization that I wanted to touch on, just slipped my mind, but as soon as it pops back in, I know what it was. It was this, there's a religious group down in West Texas, and they are involved in a project which is really exciting. They have raised enough money to build a biosphere, and in this biosphere they want to simulate the conditions described in Genesis. And they have changed the magnetic field in that area. They have changed the atmosphere. They have changed the water and the content of the water chemically. They have changed the food that they expect the people and the animals in this enclosure to digest. And they are having amazing results. I was there 2 years ago, maybe three, I can't quite remember, and they had already showed examples of how these changes in atmospheric pressure, magnetic field intensity, the frequency of light and the water and all this stuff had affected experimental animals. And they had fish that were normally not any larger than you could hold in your hand, that had grown to the size of like three or 4 feet in length. They had small horny toad type critters that had grown into creatures that looked like almost like miniature dinosaurs. And most exciting of all was the fact that they had taken rattlesnakes from the West Texas desert. Diamondbacks, which are extremely aggressive and have very dangerous venom. And they found that when they were subject to these changes, that the content of their venom completely changed so that it actually had beneficial effects rather than negative effects. And the demeanor of the snakes also changed considerably. So there's a lot of fascinating things happening, Don, and let me hand the ball over to you momentarily so we can start discussing some of this stuff.
Well, when you mention the snakes, now I'm imagining if let's start with from the beginning, I guess. You mentioned the biosphere. Do you know what the size of this thing is?
Well, I walked through it, and it's quite large. It's a steel, I don't know if it's steel or not. I didn't really ask, but it's a metallic enclosure. It's got to be probably 30-some-odd feet in diameter and a good 200 feet long. And okay. It's equipped with either glass or quartz windows, and it's going to have airlocks for coming in and out of it, and it's going to have its own internal circulation system for air and water. And I forget how many people are going to try to live in this thing, but there's going to be people, plants, and animals all in a microcosmic environment that's going to be controlled and try to imitate the conditions described in Genesis. Now, I have read the Bible several times during my life, and the Old Testament fascinates me quite a bit. I never thought there was that much information in Genesis that really gave any insights into the way the primordial world was. But according to these Bible scholars, there's really quite a bit of information, and they really read between the lines and figured out stuff about the amount of light that's reaching the Earth, and the fact that the atmosphere was totally different, and the magnetic field was different, and all this stuff. And I didn't really have the time to question how they came up with a lot of this stuff. And of course, the scholars themselves were not present during my tour. But I found it fascinating, first of all, that they had isolated this much information from such an ancient source, and secondarily, that they had done preliminary experiments with these animals and snakes and plants and whatnot and gotten incredible results. So I look forward to see what's going to happen when they subject people to this on a long-term basis.
Mm-hmm. Jim, I'm wondering, are they taking anything into account for the changes that are occurring right now? And I don't necessarily mean the Earth-induced changes, but I'm speaking, or the people-induced changes, more specifically. Are they taking into consideration the changes that are taking place as a result of what's occurring right now in our solar system, pretty much everywhere? And I'm not speaking about the concept of global warming. That's, to me, that's a farce.
I don't know the answer to that exactly, Don, but I can tell you this much. Whatever changes are being utilized to create these alterations in the animal life are definitely under their control, and not just what's happening in the world or in the cosmos around us. And the reason I say that is because they definitely are smart enough to have control groups. You know, they have one set of fish, for instance, that are in one tank, and they just live out their lives as a baseline for the experiment. And the other fish that have been subjected to all these changes, and supposedly they're the same species, but they've just morphed into something considerably different. The same holds true with the snake, and the same holds true with some of these plants and other things that they have done these experiments with. So even though I'm not privileged to all of the information, I was truly impressed, to be honest with you. I thought it was a very interesting experiment.
Now, are there people living in it right now, or are they just there working? And the reason I ask that, if the animals are changing, what's going to happen when the people start living there? Are they going to change, or has anyone changed?
Well, I don't think that the thing is habitable yet, because when I was there, the windows weren't installed, you know, the doors weren't, the airlocks weren't finished, and all this kind of stuff. And the self-sustaining systems for plumbing and water and oxygen and whatnot were not yet installed. So that may be a few years away. But one of the things we did discuss was that this, in a lot of ways, would be similar to a huge hyperbaric chamber. And it's already pretty well known that if you increase the atmospheric pressure and the oxygen content by not that much, you know, I don't remember the percentages, but to put it back in a time, for instance, when there was more oxygen in the atmosphere and there was more atmospheric pressure bearing down on us, the fact is well known that injuries have tendency to heal a lot more quickly. Diseases associated with bacteria and viruses are quickly destroyed by the increased oxygenation. And so if a person was actually raised in that environment, let's say from a young age to adulthood, who's to say what the changes might be? It's pretty interesting thing to consider.
Now, are they going to have, like, fast food restaurants? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I'm sure no. There'll be a dome right next door with McDonald's in it.
Oh, yes. We can be crazy about this, can't we? Well, it's, you know, we're just having fun here, of course. Have they discussed anything beyond the control of the farm productivity and the atmosphere and you know, the air purity and its relationship to things that people do that have meaning? I'm thinking along the, you know, let's say along the lines of creativity, creative art or invention or anything like that. Are they planning on monitoring what happens once they get people in there and they're spending their time in there? Of course, they're probably not going to be watching television and listening to the radio, but even, you know, back in biblical times, they had music and they had art and they had dance and they had sculpting and, you know, they had creative activities going on. Have they addressed any of that with you, that what they would presume would be the desirable activities to conduct in there?
Well, they hadn't really addressed those issues per se, but we did have one conversation which I thought was kind of interesting, and now in retrospect, it does seem to bear on your question. And that is, you know, I had mentioned to them, of course, these folks are Christians, and so, you know, their point of view is a little bit different than mine, but nonetheless, I did share with them my belief that there was a post-antediluvian, a pre-antediluvian civilization. And they agreed with that and said that, the conversation went into a description of how there's so many similarities in the very ancient civilizations, even though they were separated by huge distances. And one of the theories that explains this, of course, is that there were several mother continents like Atlantis, Lemuria, Mu, Hyperborea, whatever, and all these areas were the places in which culture began, and then it spread out around the world to other areas, and that's the reason why there's so many similarities. But they brought up a very interesting point, and that is that under certain conditions, if the human mind is free from all of the degrading aspects that affect it in modern society, if the air and the water and the food are pure, and if the conditions in the environment are more similar to what they may have been back toward the time of creation, their theory was that there's an automatic link that becomes established between the mind of man and the mind of the creator, and so under those conditions, regardless of how far they may be separated by distance, they're going to be getting the same inspirations in response to pondering problems. And this is why it seems that there would be simultaneous discoveries of stuff like farming, animal husbandry, pottery, the construction of buildings, et cetera, you know, art, as you pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it wasn't necessarily discussed as part of their agenda, they are certainly going to monitor the way the people behave in this little isolated community, and if there are changes in creativity, I'm sure it'll be noticed on.
Yeah. Well, it just, you know, my main reason for asking the question wasn't necessarily because I have a strong interest in music so much as I know the impact that the study of the arts has on the human spirit. And if, you know, what you're talking about is adhering to universal law, you have to consider the spiritual side of the, of that too, and that's really what we're about. That's been, you know, the opposite of the paradigm here on Earth for the past at least 15,000 years and maybe half a million years, is that there's always been someone in control outside of the mass of people, and that's held the consciousness back. And so this pristine environment, this positive environment, nurturing environment, is going to contribute to opening up those centers of creativity that have been dormant in man for the past half million years, despite what
we hear it does.
Yeah. So I was just asking that. To me, it seems pretty important. Maybe they've given it some consideration. Maybe they haven't. So I was just fishing for an answer.
Yeah. Well, but we didn't touch on that area of the thing specifically, but the rest of it seems to be pretty well thought out, and I give them the benefit of the doubt that most likely they've considered how this would change man, both creative in his creative capacity and also perhaps spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
Because actually spirituality is a higher form of consciousness, as you know.
Yeah.
So all these things are bound to be affected if this experiment yields positive results.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I've been away from it for quite some time. It would be interesting now to check back with them and see how they're making out with this whole thing. It would certainly be fuel for a future show, if nothing else.
Yeah. Now, are they? Have they discussed? I would presume if they're going to be, you know, farming or maybe in that environment, maybe gardening would be the more appropriate term. But if they're cultivating food for self sustainability, and they're looking at issues of soil depletion or nutrient depletion, are they going to be practicing organic farming, hydroponics? Did they allude to any particular method that they were going to focus on?
The stuff we talked about while I was there was the hydroponic idea, because otherwise, they, as you pointed out, they would have to have some way of replenishing the soil. And so it was going to be done by enriching the water that was applied to these plants. But to be honest with you, the guy who was giving me the tour was the person who is the founder of the concept. And his point of view was much more of an overview, you might say, as to the scope of the total project, rather than him being well informed on all the engineering issues.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a few people involved in the thing, and from what I understand, they work at it part-time, you know, because nobody's got the money to just sit there and work on it until it's completed. So I didn't really get to meet any of the, you might call it the engineering team.
Well, it sounds like an interesting project. Now, so now in terms of their power that they're going to use to support this for any equipment that they run, let's say, to filter water or to filter air or, you know, even unlock the doors, or to lock the doors, I guess. Are they, did they allude to what method or methods they were leaning toward in terms of, you know, are we talking about solar energy or maybe something that's yet to be developed?
No, actually, the impression I got was that their concern was much more about the long-term effects of creating this unusual environment. And as far as I know, they were just tied to the grid for power. But these other communities that I mentioned are very much interested in a total disconnect from the standard power source. And they are naturally looking at everything from wind to solar to geothermal to stuff that's proprietary even. So, you know, the other groups are focusing on different things. I've had many, many conversations, Don, with people that are conscious enough of the overall situation to come to the realization that culture, or the level of culture that a given group of people is capable of manifesting, is directly proportional to what their energy source is and how expensive that type of energy is, as far as the sustainability of it on a regular basis is concerned. And so it's very obvious, you know, if you stop and think, it isn't just the idea that if you're a monopoly on, let's say, electrical power or a monopoly on gasoline, it's very obvious you can pretty well charge what you want to once the system is established and everybody is more or less tied into it, because people would rather pay and get on with their lives than to be without the conveniences that transportation and electricity offer. But there's a secondary tier to consider in all of this, and that is that the higher the cost of these types of power are to the people at large, then obviously the harder they have to work to sustain the same level of creativity and entertainment and everyday living that they're used to.
Yeah, you're talking about the basic quality of life, right?
and so what happens is, and I'm sure that this is by design, when you bring the price up on these utilities and these fuels, the people that are using them are forced into a particular notch from which they can't escape because they're too busy treading water.
Yeah.
And so it's not only an interesting scheme to separate you from your money, but it's also a very effective way to keep cultural developments at a minimum.
Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, I had a conversation with a gentleman who works at a nuclear power plant in the state of Illinois. And he was telling me that they produce a kilowatt of electricity for about 1.5 cents. But they charge 15...
You mean a kilowatt hour?
Or a kilowatt hour, yes. 15 cents a kilowatt hour they're charging. So basically, they're charging 10 times what it costs them to make it. Mm-hmm. And to me, that seems like that's already way, way over a reasonable profit. In the retail business, businesses are allowed to make 40%, and they consider that to be fair. And it might be fair in some cases, but on high ticket items like automobiles and houses and things like that, by the time you're done paying for a house, you pay 3 times what the actual sticker price is on the house. When you're done with the
interest.
Well, that's what I mean. A $100,000 house carried to term over 30 years costs $300,000. And then you have this issue of a depreciating dollar. And so you're paying that money nevertheless, even though the value is less. And so to be in a situation where you are unencumbered by these situations that are geared to eventually fail. I mean, if they're supported by you, the customer, and you are destroyed by the system, eventually the system itself has to collapse too. It has no one else to support it.
Yeah, of course, and that's true. That's true not only of utilities and fuels, it's actually true of the government, because the government is becoming the same type of an animal. You know, the idea of taking money from Joe to feed Harry's family down the street because they happen to be out of work, it sounds very appealing from the standpoint of a liberal point of view. But in reality, the more and more people that are forced onto the assistance programs that are available, that means that fewer and fewer people supporting those things. People seem to have the idea that money just grows on trees in Washington. They forget that it comes out of the hip pockets of the working class. And mm-hmm. So sooner or later, the same thing happens with government. There's no way that this can continue. We've talked about that I don't know how many times.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all geared to collapse sooner or later. The only thing is, I think the people who set these systems in motion realize this, but the reason they don't care is because they will have all the wealth.
Mm-hmm.
They believe that when it collapses, then they will come back with some other deal and start a new game going.
Oh yeah, they're already working on that now. That's why we're seeing the, you know, things move so rapidly. But thanks to all these people, not just the groups you're mentioning, there are a lot of other ones. There are people all over the planet really working on bringing new technology forward. We've got air cars now. We've got water cars. We've got cars that run on electricity. They're looking at new kinds of batteries. It would still be an electrical car, but it would be something that would liberate someone from being dependent upon an oil cartel that never was honest with the people and has really, I mean, they've turned food manufacturing and pharmaceutical manufacturing into part of their oil company the same way. And not to dwell on that negative, other than to say, okay, if people can grow their own food and they can produce their own seeds, they're no longer dependent upon the psychopaths that are just intent on killing people and getting rich in the process.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people in the past who have investigated the mania of control. And what's interesting about it is that it's a form of sickness, of course, to be such a control freak. But the interesting thing is that all these big companies and all these big governmental agencies seem to be afflicted with it much more so than the common folks who do all the work in the world. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you mention this is very interesting, because I won't mention the names of the companies that I've looked into, but some of these huge corporations that are involved in genetic research, they're involved in the development of fertilizers and other agents that are used to grow food now, they have manipulated the situation in such a way that the soil itself, it becomes addicted to the fertilizers. The plants that they offer for farmers to grow have no seeds anymore. And you have to go back to them for the next year's supply of seed.
Well, now, this is evident footprints, Jim. You can mention Monsanto on this show.
Well, okay. I'm glad you did. That's exactly who I was thinking of.
And
but anyway,
W.R. Grace. W.R. Grace and Company, too. You can mention them also.
Well, anyway, the point I was trying to make is that, you know, this is a very dangerous situation to be in. And it's just amazing to me that the majority of the folks have just sort of slid into this predicament without really protesting that much. And I'm very refreshed to see that these small groups of individuals, which I'm sure only represent a handful of people in the long run, at least have the tenacity and the goodwill to set up these experimental communities, do their own farming, produce pure water for their people, and develop energy sources which are not dependent upon the grid. Now, my biggest concern with this stems from stories that I have heard over the years from associates of mine that I have known in the past. Now, we haven't talked about this before, I don't believe, but when I was younger, I was quite a woodsman, and I lived in the wilderness. I did a lot of hiking and camping and mountain climbing, and I spent a lot of time, as a matter of fact, as much time as possible outside the confines of civilization and in particular the cities. And as a result of that, I met individuals similar to myself in the Appalachian Climbing Club and in various rock climbing groups that had experimented with living under these conditions 25, 30 years ago. And the unfortunate thing was that a lot of these folks were actually discovered in these little remote areas. They had built shacks or cabins or whatever, and were trying to, you know, farm and do things and live outside the normal arrangement. And when they were discovered by various governmental agencies, they were basically kicked off the property because they were informed that they didn't own it. It's governmental land. Nobody can live there, this and that and the other thing. There are so many laws and so many lunatics in charge that I wonder if these communities are going to be threatened by a whole host of unjust laws once they start to sprout up, because the government doesn't want to lose control over the tax units, as we are referred to so lovingly. And that's exactly what this type of a movement represents. It's a departure from being on the leash or being on the treadmill.
Yeah, I agree. So, you know, you're talking about really people just making the decision and reclaiming their sovereignty. That's, you know, and with that comes a responsibility. You know, I would rather be responsible to myself first and foremost than to anyone else. And once I can be responsible to myself, then I've earned the right to be responsible to others. It's a totally the opposite concept of what government is. Their interest is themselves, collectively as a corrupt body, and in total ignorance of or denial of the fact that they are really supposed to represent our interests. You know, that's following natural law, what you're describing. It's going to upset them, but I think it's once it takes off, there's going to be so many of these pocket communities, if you want to call them that, that they'll also come up with ways to defend themselves against being taken over. You know, this madness has to end sooner or later, and I applaud those people for having the guts and the courage and the common sense to make that kind of a decision collectively.
Well, yeah, and you know what's interesting too, even though certain parts of the country cannot be defined literally as experimental communities or whatever you want to call the subject that we're addressing here, there are movements afoot even now. For instance, I'll give you an example. There's areas in New Mexico. There's areas in Arizona, which I have visited and lectured at. And people are flocking there all by themselves. It's really weird. It's like there's a consciousness. It kind of reminds me of the Steven Spielberg movie, Encounters of the Third Kind, or whatever it's called.
Close Encounters? Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah, when the people were getting an image, certain individuals were just getting an image to go to this mountain, Devil's Peak, or whatever that thing is called, Devil's Pile. It's something similar is already happening. People are flocking to certain areas of the country. And when you go there, you find out that they're thirsty, literally thirsty, for new ideas, new concepts, new ways of thinking, new ways of addressing old problems. They don't want the shackles. They're looking for a way out. And I think this is a movement that's growing. And I praise God that it's happening. The only thing is that right now, the movements of this type are missing certain basic fundamental building blocks, such as a reliable power source and possibly some legal and financial assistance. But I think that if enough people become enthralled with this concept, that those problems will be licked, and you're going to start to see some kind of a decentralization of society. Rather than people clustering together in cities, which is madness anyway, I think you're going to see these groups going off on their own and saying, "Hey, look, we want isolation, we want peace of mind. We're willing to be responsible for ourselves," and that's exactly the way it's supposed to be.
It begins with the decision, because at the point when the individual makes that decision that they are going to control their life, they are putting the responsibility in their own hands, number one. So they can take the blame if they fail at something. And they're approaching it from the get-go with a I-can-do attitude, and I will do, and I am doing, or I am being, which is a lot different from it's been done to me, I've been had, and I can't. You understand. So,
I understand.
Starting on that basis, they are going to enter the realm to where their higher gifts will begin to manifest themselves through their intention. It has to happen that way, because they're not being held back by the nonsense that's going on in this current matrix.
It's interesting that you should point that out, because let me just interject this little anecdote, because it's really worthwhile. When my son was very young, he had such an interest in the outdoors and whatnot that I took him, I made arrangements to take him on a survival trip with some Native American friends of mine. And the whole purpose of the exercises that we're engaged in on this trip is to demonstrate how, once you put yourself in a certain set of circumstances, your consciousness automatically changes. Measurements have actually been made under these survival-type situations by various universities that demonstrates that some incredible number, like 94% of brain capacity, is automatically engaged and utilized when you are in a self-sustaining mode of existence, than the 2 or 3% of the brain, which is used when you are sitting around watching TV, working on your computer, typing a letter or whatever. Because the focus of your consciousness on a single task allows the entire rest of the brain to relax and eventually to not be used. But when you are trying to concentrate, for instance, on building a cabin, and you still have to be aware of the fact that there are bears in your area, you have to be aware of the weather, you have to be aware of 100 things at one time, the brain is actually capable of doing that. And it completely accelerates your consciousness and allows you to live at a much more heightened level of excitation, and you enjoy, literally, a much bigger swath of life. And all of these things become very apparent in some of these Native American training sessions. One of them that I enjoyed particularly, which I thought is totally fascinating, in the middle of the night, they bring you something like 2 miles away from the camp. They blindfold you. This is in total darkness, like, 2 o'clock in the morning. And there's a person that remains behind beating a drum. And you have to get from where they take you back to the camp without any assistance. And you can't take the blindfold off. And what's really fascinating is they have a guy walking a few feet from you who is not blindfolded, just to make sure you don't break your neck or fall into a crevasse or something. But aside from that, you're on your own. And after a few minutes of doing this, Don, as God is my witness, you can see everything with the blindfolds on. I mean, you just know what's there. You can feel the trees. You can feel the rocks. You know what the ground is going to do. And just that simple exercise of walking towards the drum beat in total darkness with your eyes covered allows other parts of your brain to start working, and they've probably been, in retirement for years. And this is just one little thing. Imagine if you spent your whole life attuned to this type of living and allowed your consciousness to operate at a much higher level than we do in so-called civilized life. I think that you'd have a much richer life, even if it was a harder life.
Mm-hmm. And imagine the creativity and the new ideas that would come through from that, too.
Absolutely.
Once you wake the brain, once it's awake and you're eating properly and you're thinking positive thoughts and you're being productive and feeling good about what you're doing, you can't help but be creative. You can't help but move upward. And really, that's the opposite of the matrix we find ourselves in right now. So can they stop this? Well, they can try, but I can guarantee you that they will fail. They're failing now. Their own system is crumbling apart now. And they're not that together that they can sustain anything, any kind of even a peaceful rebellion when they're trying to fend for themselves. Because when we forego the plans they have for us and create our own new reality, they're going to have to go somewhere else to find somebody to rule. And as far as I'm concerned, they can be flushed down the toilet. That's what they'll be worth or less without us.
Well, I think they know this. Part of the deal has always been to create an atmosphere in which we wind up being dependent upon them. And this is a fallacy because I never fell for it. I said, you know, like, what the heck do I need you people for? But then, of course, not everybody thinks that way. And there are a lot of people that are so concerned about, you know, survival and security and all these things that they just fall right into this type of arrangement without any resistance. I think that it was Benjamin Franklin who said that anybody who is willing to give up freedom for security will wind up losing both. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, when you build your foundation of anything, whether it's a building or it's a government or it's a nation, when it's built upon an illusion, or it's allowed, the original foundation is replaced with an illusion, you can only build upon that with an illusion. You can't put anything of substance on an illusion and have it stand. So it has to fall. It's destined to fail. And the things that we're talking about tonight, these changes, they're totally different concepts, totally different ideas. But they're taking into consideration what could be now. See, this doesn't have to happen. It's their greed and it's their madness that's going to cause that failure.
Well, I agree with you. And the only thing that concerns me is that most of the people I know, I'm talking about average folks, they have a very deep-seated fear about certain types of change because they're just, even though they don't like the system, they're familiar with it. And that's a very, very strange human trait. But it's been used against us for thousands of years. And I think it's about time that we face that and figure out a way around it. Because most fear is only in your head. You know, when you actually get into what these changes are all about, you'll feel a sense of excitement. You'll feel a renewal. You'll feel a sense of adventure. The fear is a product of your imagination. It doesn't have to be that way.
Well, it's always been part of the whole system. I mean, you know, it's not considered to be normal if you don't express the fear, because the fear has been spoon-fed to us for so long. You see, what's interesting about this group that's building this biosphere that you're describing is what is their original basis or what is their inspiration that started the whole thing?
Their inspiration was the fact that in the Bible it describes, first of all, the way the world used to be, and then it implies that people were larger, they were healthier, and they lived for hundreds of years. And so these people said, well, hey, what happens if we reinstitute those types of conditions that once prevailed on Earth? Would something change?
Well, and what you're referring to is the original consciousness and the original faith that man had at that time. The original awareness of their purpose. Somehow they strayed away from that over time, succumbing to those that devised these devious ways of coercing people into doing something else, into trying something else, into following someone's orders, or you know, I mean, this was carefully crafted over thousands and thousands of years. So, with the intent of doing what they're doing, there was no other purpose other than to just control. And as one by one people relinquished a certain right, we lost touch with that faith, And those are people that are realizing that if it worked back then, it can work now. What do? You have to replace or restore the faith. You have to restore the responsibility that goes with that faith. You can't just have blind faith and not have any foundation, and you can't build it on an illusion. So I think what you've described about these people, and I'm just kind of analyzing what I hear you describing, is that they've come to that realization that they are going to take the responsibility. Well, win or lose, they're going to take responsibility for what they do. But they're basing it upon principles now. You're talking about God's laws. You're not talking about the 23 million or so in Washington, D.C. that were created by these madmen. It's got to work. And what other choice do they have?
Well, I mean, the only other choice is to continue on with what we have, and we already know it's spiraling down the tubes.
Mm-hmm.
So I would rather trek out on my own, and if I come to a bad end, well, that's okay. It's my decision.
Yeah.
But, you know, the idea that we're just all going to blindly follow with everything that they say, that just doesn't sit well with me.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I've been a rebel all my life, so I don't see any point in changing now.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of young people that think that way. The only thing that's different about it is that they don't know where to put the energy. And so as a result of that, it short circuits, and they do all these weird things with their, you know, with their bodies and with the drinking and the drugs and all this other nonsense. But I think that the force that they're feeling is the desire to separate from the status quo. They just don't have the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're witnessing a combination of, you know, this force that's in place, and they're brought up into it, yet there's all these changes that we were talking about occurring, and they haven't been around long enough to totally be sucked into this void. And as a result, yes, there is a bit of a conflict, an internal conflict going on, because they're trying to make sense of all this, and they're coming in with fresh ideas and fresh inspiration, and they haven't been totally toxified. Maybe that's the term I'm looking for, you know, by all of this. You can be toxic in your body, and you can be toxic in your thinking. And what does the spirit have to work with then? Nothing, you know, until all that toxicity is removed. So
yeah.
So you're seeing the young people struggle with that. But there are some powerful young people coming out of the woodwork, even in politics. There are some young people that have fresh ideas, that see things the way they are. And they know what's an illusion and what's real. Some part of them knows. And whether one approaches it from a religious perspective or just a common sense decision not to just be a sheep and just follow for the sake of following, but to have some meaningful purpose in life. You know, it's the perfect thing to be aligned with such a project as the one you described tonight, where people have something to look forward to, something to learn, something to be inspired by, and something to contribute to. It's total opposite of what we have going on now. So keep us posted on whatever you hear, and I'm sure we'll talk more about this concept in upcoming shows. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, so we have time to say goodnight. Is there anything you can recommend to the listeners to look at, a place they could go to find out more about this?
Well, actually, to be honest with you, the whole subject of tonight's show was so spontaneous that I really didn't prepare for it, but if you think that people would be interested in this, what I can do between now and next week would be to actually find out if there are websites or other sources of information that would allow people to find out more, and then I'll report back to you.
Okay, that sounds fair. Now, you know me, I'm interested in the ones that are really doing the work, not the ones that are pretending like they're doing the work. You know, we have this green movement that's taken over the planet, and right away they have to infiltrate it and control it so that they can stop it from happening. You know, we're talking about groups or inventors or, you know, people that have come up with some really novel ideas that are practical and can be instituted without the necessity of millions or billions of dollars, but just starting using basic, simple principles, building upon that.
And not only that, but the people that are actually doing something rather than just talking.
Yes.
Because talk is cheap. It always has been.
Yes, and that's all you and I did tonight, unfortunately.
Well, when they come up with a more direct medium of exchange where we can do more than talk, I'll jump right in there.
You know I'm just kidding. Well, we have to talk to get the energy moving, right? Once you talk, then you start doing. And I know you have practical experience in these areas you're talking about, so... You know, we want to let the audience know that. You're not just a talker, you're a doer. And you're a thinker, too.
I try my best.
All right, Jim, well, thank you for being on the show again tonight. And I guess I look forward to next week. We'll delve into this topic a bit further and maybe discuss some new energy concepts, how they really work, and how they can be practical for people. It seems like every brilliant idea has a high price tag these days, and that's because of, you know, who's been controlling it. So maybe, you know, we can explore ways of getting into some of these technologies without sacrificing our firstborn.
There you go.
Okay,
definitely
thanks.
Worth following up on.
Yes, thanks for being on the show tonight, Jim, and I want to wish you the best throughout the week, and I want to thank the listeners for tuning in to Evident Footprints tonight on bbsradio.com. Our special guest was Jim Murray, and he will be back. In fact, he still is Jim Murray. he'll be back with us next Friday, same time, same place. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be back Monday with another show. We got some great shows coming up the whole month of April and May, so you want to stay tuned, Monday through Friday. I will be on the air with Dr. Len Horowitz, possibly Reverend Roxy Hampton, on Mission Possible this Sunday, 9 p.m. Pacific time. Please tune in for that show as well. And I'm also doing the TNT News Hour on Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific. I do the Baton Exchange with the network founder, Don Newsom. So catch that show also. We bring a lot of news that you don't hear on the mainstream. In the meantime, I want to thank you again for tuning in. And it's time for us to go. So I'll wish you lots of peace, love, and light, and have a good night.
Hi, this is singer-songwriter Kara Johnstad, and you're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.